Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Father's Day. I'd like to thank all of you that brought pictures of your father. And, of course, I had to overdo it a little bit. My father, George Anthony Smith, was born in 1893, and he died 31 years ago in my hometown in Watsonville, California. My dad was 44 years old when I was born, and when they saw us together, sometimes people would tell us what good-looking grandchildren he had. Dad and I did not have a good relationship. I remember a combination of fear and anger that he was not being fair to me. He was a controlling person, which collided with my rebellious nature. Dad would tell me the right way to go about things, and I wanted to do things my way. After one of these arguments, I ran out to our backyard and sat on a bench, put my arm around my black Cocker Spaniel Topsy, and was crying when my dad came out and said, "You love that dog more than you love me." And I said, "That's for sure." I seldom receive compliments from him. So, you may well question, why am I chosen to give this sermon on Father's Day? Two incredible important events changed my opinion of Dad and consequently my life. My mother, Ruth, died 21 years ago, and while visiting me in Danville 2 days after celebrating her 88th birthday, when cleaning out her house in Watsonville, I discovered a box in a high space above the bedroom closet. Getting a ladder and a broom, I retrieved this box and found it jammed with letters. There were 48 love letters written by my dad to my mom in 1923 and 1924 while she was attending San Jose Teachers College, which is now San Jose University, and during her first year of teaching in Petaluma. Dad was a printer working at a local newspaper. He had quit school in the fifth grade after his father died in an industrial accident. A quick reading of some of these letters made me realize that these love letters portrayed a very different man than the one I knew. And yet they made it clear how much my childhood was shaped by this man. I was very impressed by his writing and ability to express himself. Although I knew about his artistic ability, I certainly never knew about his poetic ability. Unfortunately, I never found Mom's love letters. These letters sat in this box until September 2012, when the second great event occurred. I signed up for a course in creative writing offered by the Occalanis Adult Education Center in Walnut Creek. After my first class, I decided to dig out the letters and write about them. The class procedure was to type about 2 pages, make extra copies, and read your work, getting comments and good advice from the teacher and the class. I would copy interesting parts of 2 or 3 of the letters and intersperse them with experiences from my childhood. I wrote a total of 17 chapters, and I titled them Love Letters in a Box. The first letter was postmarked February 19, 1924, and was sent regular mail. This was 2 cents. I tried to figure out what 2 cents is worth today, but I never came up with an answer. Okay. Now, all the letters were 6 inches by 8.5 inches. Usually 2 sheets of green paper written on both sides with each page numbered. Since one of my dad's jobs was printing stationery, all his letters had his initials in an attractive design. Okay. Well, you know what it's going to say. G-A-S, gas. Okay. Fortunately, Dad wrote so well that it was quite easy to read the letters. It usually started out pretty funny. He had, and I'm going to quote this, mutilated about a half a dozen sheets of paper in trying to write this note. You see, the only thing I ever have written to a school teacher was an excuse. I also found it funny after saying how lucky her students were because she was so pretty that, and this is another quote, it sure was my hard luck when I went to school. We had no pretty school marms, but plenty of Amazons. After saying how he missed her already, he then says, I suppose you will wonder why I have written such a silly letter or why I should write it at all. But you see, I'm just like the native California flea. I must bother someone, and I can't think of anyone I'd rather bother than you. He then ends his letter with a poem. Oh, little school marm, I hope there is no harm in these few words of script. So don't get alarmed or say, gosh darn, you'll stay after school for this. And he signed it, Your Obedient Pupil, George. The next letter was sent April 1st, and a different side of Dad came out in the first page. Ruth, I shan't tell you how miserable I felt when I reached home Sunday night, but I will say I slept but little and really cussed myself out for being half beast. He then writes about his car repairs and about, quote, glancing at your picture on my dresser, and it looked so real just now, I almost wanted to call you. He then fashions the following, another poem. Ruth, I just gazed at your picture until it seemed quite real, teasing me with dimple and gesture, how I wished but a kiss I could steal. Now, if you take the first letter of each of those four, it spells R-U-T-H. Why not? I am certain he was in love, but in all the years I knew them, I never saw them kiss. He ends his letter, well, I got that nonsense off my hand, and seeing as you won't read half of this letter at any rate, I'll say goodnight. Yet it was Mom that saved these letters. The next letter is the first of many sent. Special delivery. 10 cents. Okay. He had received a letter from Mom and commented, it was a real honest-to-goodness letter. You see, it had a touch of your real self in it. He plans to pick her up at the train station. At that time, there was a train from San Jose to Pajaro, which is just south of Watsonville, and he wanted her to be sure to bring her bathing suit for the weekend. Now, I have a photo of them in bathing suits, and I can tell you, they were not glamorous in those days. He ends his next letter by saying, I wish I were right that this very night someone is thinking of me. He then has a P.S., where he asked for even a minute of her time. By now, that's apparent. Dad is serious, and Mom is not. His letter of July 23rd ends with another of his poems. I like this one. Little Ruthie went to Petaluma School to teach the kiddies the golden rule. But I bet a teacher she won't be long, for to some chicken farmer she'll belong. Told you he was a poet. I told you. After writing many chapters, I tried something different. Fiction with dialogue. In this chapter, I have my parents meet their wish. And after 10 years of separation, they meet in heaven. I told you this is fiction. I told you. I had a lot of fun writing this, but it also gave me a chance to further explore my relationship with Dad. After they meet, I have Dad ask Mom why it took him 3 weeks to get out of purgatory and Mom got out in 3 days. She gave reasons such as, well, George, when you went AWOL in France in World War I to be with your French girlfriend, and then about the tenuous relationship with me. In these fiction chapters, they could look down on Earth and hear what was happening, but could not speak to anyone here. Dad initially became upset when he learned that I was reading his writing and poetry in class, until Mom told him how much the students and I loved his work. So then I have Mom say, you know, I've heard what you wrote to me, and I think we need to rekindle this romance. And I would like you to start off by giving me a great big kiss. Remember I said I never saw him. Okay, so there's this big kiss, and then my mom says, that's not bad kiss at all for a 125-year-old man. In the last chapter, I create a dream where Dad and I really establish a bond. At the end of the dream, I tell them both how much I love them. Without these letters and my writing, I'm quite sure I would have never felt like telling Dad that I loved him. Recently, I tried to stuff the letters back in the box. And I've only got part of the letters in there. All the letters were expanded, and it no longer fit in the box with the lid closed. The result is a metaphor. The letters have expanded my understanding of my father. This was an experience that most people don't get to have, a real insight into who George Smith was before he became my father. Now, since this is a sermon, I'm now going to do a little preaching here.
Preach on?
Yeah. I don't want his job. So here it is. It is so important to talk to your parents and get to know them while they are alive, and for parents to make a real effort to tell their children about the life they have lived. So now I'd like Bob Britton, Keith Lewis, and Doug Sprague, who will now read a segment from Dad's Love Letters in a Box.
I just don't seem capable tonight to trace my real thoughts and feelings on paper. My heart is so full that I want to throw this pen of mine away, go right to you and hold you just once more. Ruth, could you be with me tonight just to help me untangle my thoughts, to help me that I might understand myself and you, dear? For should I write tonight as in my heart and real self dictate, it would be ever the same, the love of a man for a woman, Ruth. What can I do? I'm just reaching out in the dark. I want to do all that is right and good. I want you to be free to choose. I want you to be happy. Yet, most of all, I want you too. I received your letter this morning and your wonderful gift. Is it any wonder that I'm in confusion and my soul running riot? That I know you to be capable of such love is indeed a great happiness to me, even though I shall never be the receiver of it.
As I wrote you the other day, Ruthie, a man is so much like a ship. He drifts with a good wind or an evil one. And he does need the touch of a good woman at the wheel to keep him on the proper course. God knows I need just a hand to aid me. But I know I should not expect the impossible, to create love when it doesn't exist. Ruthie, there are so many things I want to write. But why pour out my griefs to you when you no doubt have lots of your own? Good night, dear, and love. George.
Ruthie, I must tell you that the past Saturday night was a night of nights for me. Somehow it was different, and I wonder, will I ever spend such a night again? I hope so. It was not that I was different. I am ever the same. But Ruth, God, I never thought you could be so wonderful. You were natural, kind, and you just reflected all that is good in one's soul. Ruth, there are these things that, when shown to a man, helps him to aspire to greater things, create a desire to do good, and build a love everlasting. Yet it might have been but a fleeting moment of happiness, never to return. If it is so, I shall never forget it, and sometimes in the long distance, when you have forgotten me, I shall be able to close my eyes and again feel the warmth of your kindness. And he ends the letter with one of his poems. Just a moment of happiness, just the touch of a secret caress, just the joy of a beating heart, are memories that will never depart.
I'd like to thank Bob, Keith, and Doug for making my parents, my dad's letters are really alive. Thank you very much, guys. You may wonder, when did the letters stop? Well, the second year of my mother's teaching was in Cordelitas. Cordelitas is 10 miles north of Watsonville, so no more love letters. The next question might be is, well, when did they ever get married? You know, and they got married on Easter Sunday in 1927. Now, I told you my dad worked for a printing company. You tell me, here's the Evening Pyronian, and right up here has that England and China are having a big problem. And right under it says, Karstead wedding yesterday. So I'm going to end this whole thing by showing you that in 1930, they went to visit my dad's mom, who was still alive in Albany, New York, and they went by train. But they didn't go by train the whole way. Between Glendale and Chicago, they flew on a Ford Trimotor. Yeah. Okay. Now, I hope you'll realize that people dressed a little bit different when they flew on an airplane with them. And the other thing was, this is the pilot. So even though my dad was a pilot in World War I, he flew reconnaissance planes. He didn't fly my mom to Chicago. That's it.